Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is a simple case. There are two grounds for personal jurisdiction.
Well, it is simple in the sense that you waived your main ground, leaving you with just a few phone calls. So I don't understand how you try to get around this waiver problem.
Well, we would argue
your quotation from what your, I guess, predecessor lawyer filed in the district court doesn't do it at all.
We would argue here that this wasn't a waiver, that the arguments for agency under the Interstate Corrections Compact.
No, but the only agency you talked about in not your predecessor talked about in the district court was agents' relationship between the New Mexico people and their employer, not agency between them and Illinois.
Right.
How would you alert the district court to the fact that that because of this interstate compact, you have this argument about there being in effect agents of Illinois?
Right. Well, the discussion of respondeat superior is obviously preserved on page 4.
But it's really out of context. You know what I think you need to do, since I agree that the interstate compact is so buried inside cases that are cited inside the district court's opinion, I think what you need to do is look, and it would be helpful for me if you reviewed, at each of these three defendants. Personal jurisdiction is personal jurisdiction. So just because the state of New Mexico may have some association with Illinois doesn't take me very far anyway. Dr. Pulara, Ms. Cedillo, Mr. McReynolds, what are their affiliations with Illinois? Because I can tell you I don't see any with Cedillo. Now, the content of the phone calls may be of some use. The district court was alerted to the fact that those phone calls were the way of associating. Maybe if Dr. Pulara is directing people in Illinois to take steps on his behalf with respect to Mr. Kinslow, that begins to get you into a specific jurisdiction. I don't know, but I need you to talk specifically about what you think links each of these three people to the state of Illinois.
Sure. Dr. Pulara is head of, he's basically the head doctor
of
New Mexico
Corrections
Department.
He's the head doctor, and he phones up his counterpart in Illinois. And what do we know about that conversation?
Mr. Kinslow was being treated for hepatitis C pursuant to a settlement agreement between the states related to his chemotherapy treatment.
Is Mr. Kinslow still alive, by the way?
Mr. Kinslow is still alive. So Dr. Pulara was informed by Dr. Elia in the Illinois Corrections Department that Mr. Kinslow, it would be best to transfer Mr. Kinslow back to New Mexico. Dr. Pulara investigated this, made some additional phone calls into the Illinois Corrections Department,
Is it fair to say that Dr. Pulara directed the people in Illinois to arrange for the transfer back to New Mexico?
On the medical side, yes. He began investigating the cost effectiveness of treatment both in Illinois and in New Mexico.
Right. Well, we need to know, what did he do in Illinois? And if he instructed people in Illinois on his behalf, rather than hop on an airplane and do it all himself, if he instructed people in Illinois, that might be of some utility to you.
That is specifically what he did, yes. And then Mr. McReynolds, in turn, contacted McNeil and McCarthy Smith, who were essentially on the ground in the Illinois corrections system, to begin the transfer process, who were instructed to engage a private prisoner transport company.
So who finds TransCore?
That would be individuals within the Illinois Corrections Department on the instruction of Mr. McReynolds.
Did he tell them TransCore in particular, or did he just say, find somebody who can do the transportation?
That wasn't a part of the factual record that was presented to me. Regardless, that was the specific instruction of Mr. McReynolds. Ms. Cedillo is his immediate...
But I don't see what she's done in Illinois at all. She's sitting around in New Mexico supervising Mr. McReynolds, right?
She's his immediate subordinate, I believe.
Or subordinate, so she's working for him. Is there any evidence that she did anything?
She is in his line of command, so...
That's not enough. That doesn't link her to Illinois at all.
She has been a part of this chain of command that's been making these decisions on behalf of this specific prisoner.
Right. But you have no evidence. I mean, I'm not hearing you mentioning any evidence that links her to Illinois.
She's been a part of this chain of phone calls that have made these contacts within the state of Illinois to effectuate
the
transfer.
Well, they're going to have the telephone operator, the secretary in there also? It's part of the chain of communication?
Yeah, that sounds vague to me.
I don't think that there was a secretary who's been taking these calls, making these letters.
Well, if there has been, you'd have her in there.
That might be a little attenuated here. We're focusing on these principals who have made these specific treatment decisions. We're focusing on the individuals who've made the specific treatment decisions as to Mr. Kinslow. We're aiming to obtain specific...
Why didn't Kinslow sue in New Mexico?
Because he was housed in Illinois.
New Mexico now, isn't he?
He is,
He's moved there. That was the whole point.
Right.
I thought the district court said he had sued in New Mexico.
He sued for his post-transfer treatment, right, in New Mexico?
Right, he did.
He can still sue, can't he?
No, the suit would be time-barred in New Mexico now.
The question is why, when he sued for his post-transfer treatment in New Mexico, did he not sue for what happened during the transfer? He's already got the New Mexico defendants before a New Mexico court. Seems rather fine slicing of a single series of events.
Was he pro se at that time, or did he have counsel?
He has counsel. He had trial counsel in Illinois.
In his New Mexico lawsuit against the New Mexico defendants, was he suing pro se? I thought this started out pro se. Is that wrong?
Yes. He was represented. He was pro se in the New Mexico District Court in the separate suit before the New Mexico, with the New Mexico defendants there. But the contacts that the New Mexico defendants have cannot be understated. These are not attenuated contacts. These individuals made specific business contacts as to Mr. Kinslow. These contacts
were... You're essentially saying this is a McGee case. Although the contacts are, as the district court recognized, not very extensive, they were the contacts that focused on Mr. Kinslow's transfer.
Correct.
Except for Ms. Cedillo, who, as I said, I just can't see what she did, but anyway.
Right. And additionally, a single purposeful business contact can obviously be a basis for jurisdiction under the law of this court, under the law of the state of Illinois. So we ask that the district court's order be reversed and remanded.
I'm puzzled by the agency theory that you're taking. Assume it's not been waived. Doesn't that theory then vaporize your client's claim on the merits? Because I gather that your client has now settled with the Illinois defendants. If
yes.
The Illinois defendants are agents of the New Mexico defendants, then a settlement with the agent releases the principal. Doesn't that rather undermine rather than help your client's position?
Well, while the actions of the agents here were obviously tortious,
Look, there are two possibilities. One is that the Illinois defendants were acting as agents of the New Mexico defendants, and therefore we can get the New Mexico defendants in. And in that event, the settlement with the Illinois defendants ends the case. The other possibility is that the Illinois defendants may have been acting as agents of the state of New Mexico, but not of these three named people. And in that event, the settlement with the Illinois defendants doesn't end the case, but your agency theory is collapsed. I don't see how you can have things both ways.
Well, to a certain extent, we're looking at a personal jurisdiction issue here. The torts of the Illinois...
The question I'm asking is, if the only way you can win on the personal jurisdiction issue is to lose the lawsuit on the ground of settlement... Right, that there's been accord and satisfaction, I don't see how that helps your client any.
There's obviously two theories at play here, the contacts of the New Mexico defendants, the underlying agency theory. The settlement with the
Unless you have some theory that the Illinois people were acting in dual capacities, some of which was on their own not in a principal-agent relationship, and some of which, you know, perhaps outside the scope of the agency relation or something, a frolic and detour. And part of it was within the agency relation. I don't know.
I think both of those could obviously be at play here. I think in the alternate, we would cite that the acting, in the course of
that's
acting.
Certainly a way of avoiding a court in satisfaction, but it's not the theory your brief has taken, because then you can't use in any simple way the fact that the Illinois defendants have done things as a reason why the New Mexico defendants can be sued in Illinois court. And that effectively severs this general agency theory and would put us back to the question about which phone calls were made by whom and when.
Right. Thank you very much. Right.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lam. Turnick.
Good morning. May it please the Court. A couple of corrections I'd like to make. First, regarding Dr. Pallara's contact, Dr. Pallara did not initiate the phone call calling Illinois. As his affidavit makes clear, he received a phone call from the medical director in IDOC, in which the medical director essentially expressed his desire to have Mr. Kinslow sent back to New Mexico.
Do you know whether his secretary took a message?
I don't know, Your Honor. All I can
say, I think the critical thing for the plaintiff's theory is whether the evidence would show that no matter who initiated the phone call, Dr. Pallara somehow was directing activity in Illinois.
Under Dr. Pallara's affidavit, which we supplied in support of our motion to dismiss, no request for discovery was made. Dr. Pallara especially says in his affidavit, they called me. We discussed this issue. We discussed whether it would be more economical to provide his medical care here. There is no evidence in the record whatsoever that there was any discussions concerning how his transport would be undertaken to Mexico, how medical treatment would be afforded to him while he was in transit, whether it was going to be afforded to him in transit, whether he was going to fly to New Mexico, as we've seen in the movies, in transportation of prisoners. So there was no discussion regarding how medical care was going to be accomplished in any way in connection with the transport. And that's what makes those contact, that phone conversation that he had, not connected to the tort, if you will, that's at issue in this case, the failure to provide for medical care. So I wanted to correct at least who initiated the phone call. As far as Ms. Cedillo, there's absolutely no evidence in the record that she had anything to do with it. In fact,
It sounds a little more like a point about liability than a point about jurisdiction.
Well,
because the problem is with this interstate compact having been waived, the background gets all fuzzy. Because there is, with the compact, you could say Pilar and the other, they really are doing business in Illinois. That's they're arranging things, who gets treated, who gets sent to New Mexico, who stays in Illinois, and so on. Once the compact is out of there, you just have a few phone calls.
If I may, Your Honor, knowing that Your Honors may decide after you deliberate.
Because you can certainly have jurisdiction based on activities which are completely unrelated to the tort.
If there was general jurisdiction, but that was not the basis. There was no argument made that the individual defendants were generally present, which we don't then have to get into whether there was any connection between the conduct and the tort at issue. But once we're looking at specific jurisdiction, once we're looking at the long-arm statute, there has to be some connection between the conduct or contact and the tort.
Was there any argument made, by the way, in the district court about the fiduciary shield doctrine?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
This all rests on Illinois law, and Illinois has a rule called the fiduciary shield doctrine that somebody who appears in Illinois only as an agent for an identified principal cannot be sued in Illinois.
The argument which...
specific jurisdiction theory.
The only argument we made that was related to that is we pointed out that under Illinois law, just because a principal may be subject to jurisdiction does not mean that the agent is subject to jurisdiction. So simply because New Mexico may somehow via the compact have been subject to jurisdiction does not mean that their agents are subject to jurisdiction And that
so
was
you
the
were
only
thinking if there had been a Monell type claim against the New Mexico Department of Corrections, that might have been one thing, but these particular people as the agents of the New Mexico Department need to be considered on their own.
Absolutely. In the Keaton versus Hustler case that was cited by the Tenth Circuit in Trujillo that we point out in our brief, and Calder versus Jones, the Supreme Court said in the Hustler case, they said, we have to remand this to, in order to determine whether there's jurisdiction over Larry Flint, because the court has to make an individualized inquiry. Simply because there may be jurisdiction over Hustler doesn't mean you have jurisdiction over the owner, director, editor, Larry Flint. I would just like to point out, Your Honor, that in connection with the compact, if it's a dead issue, I won't go any further, but simply in connection with the compact, that was a compact entered into between two states. The compact defines state in the compact itself and defines state just as that, a state or territory. It does not include in its definition any officers, officials, or agents of the state. So whatever relationship there may have been between the two states is wholly immaterial to this case when we have to make an individualized inquiry in connection with the conduct of these three defendants. And
the compact is helpful, though, to understand what authority, say, Dr. Pulara or New Mexico authorities in general have to direct people in Illinois to do things with prisoners who Illinois is housing for New Mexico.
Well,
at
least
some sense of responsibility.
As far as background, but it's one thing to say that a contract is entered into with your principal or by your principal in connection with another corporation or another entity in Illinois, and by entering into that contract, you somehow submit your employees to the jurisdiction of the court. And that's essentially what they've tried to argue here.
Yeah, well, that's why I would have expected you to raise the fiduciary shield doctrine, among other things.
Well, as I said, Your Honor, I did it just the only
lawsuit has to be, as a matter of Illinois law, the lawsuit has to be against the principal and not against the named agents, whose only contact with the state was as agents for the principal.
Correct. One other point in connection to Your Honor's question about the pendency of litigation. Mr. Kinslow initiated a pro se lawsuit. We raised the pendency of that lawsuit as an additional basis for requesting the district court dismiss the action. He's suing the individual defendants, these individual defendants. He's suing them for the interruption of his medical care. He also attempted or also had the state of Illinois defendants as defendants in the New Mexico case. I don't know what happened as a result of the settlement. I tried to inquire about the settlement, what the terms of the settlement were, but it was said to be confidential, and I don't know. There are no further questions. Have a nice lunch, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.